I mean, I think there's one thing we can say for sure, and that's we can't write anything off when it comes to these this Brexit process. I think many people have been surprised by a number of things that have happened over the last 18 months. So all I can say is I think the next few weeks are going to be really, really interesting. With regards to with Theresa May herself, I don't think she will be finding a temp coup, because just simply because this is something that the government seems to be very prepared for, this idea that it goes off to a committee, we'll see if there's past precedents, as if they don't have a pile full of past precedents. Sure.
Let's back up a little bit here. So we've got the legal advice that the Attorney General wrote for the Prime Minister and her cabinet about the withdrawal agreement that she's put forward. Now, this legal advice is at this point secret. The sort of the cut down version has been released to the Commons. Even that seems to have been a bit of a battle. What could be in that legal advice that is so explosive that going through these proceedings is better than actually just releasing it to the public, or even to MPs in secret?
Well, that's the thing, because we heard yesterday, even straightforward, that there is the potential for us to be kept in this backstop for an indefinite period. So if that's what is they are hiding from this legal advice, then it almost seems like a complete waste of time, because it's something that has been acknowledged. So you wonder if there's anything else in there which is even more damning and even more worrying than just this alone, and whether they're happy to almost let this be in the headlines because the other thing is much worse. But again, this is the problem with the advice itself not being published, is it generates speculation about how bad it could be, and it could actually be not bad at all. So I don't know, it's really difficult to say, because this is pure speculation. We're taking something we aren't aware of and just trying to determine, based on the reactions of the MPs and the reaction of Theresa May in particular, to decide what it is. But to be honest, I think just the indefinite backstop is pretty damning in itself, because this idea that, yes, the EU may not want us to stay in an indefinite backstop either, but as long as it's on the table, then just having blind faith that it's going to be okay and that we will form an agreement and that we will leave the backstop at some point isn't necessarily going to fill people with comfort.
Looking purely from a business point of view, let's look at that backstop, which would be if after the transition period, so ending in 2020, the end of 2020, if there isn't a better agreement in place with the EU to prevent a hard border in Ireland, then the UK as a whole remains in a customs union with the EU. Some regulatory convergence is still with the European Union as well. From business point of view, is that actually a bad thing?
Not from a business point of view, but the Brexit vote was never a business vote. It was always a political vote in many people's eyes. So this idea that if you say to a Brexiteer, well, don't worry, because we know you voted for Brexit and we are delivering on it, but this solution that we've got here is actually better for business, even if it does leave us potentially in an indefinite backstop, they're not going to look at that and go, well, that's fine, because that's roughly what I voted for.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm trying to get at is that this backstop is being put forward as just this incredible evil that the EU has somehow foisted upon the United Kingdom. And yet, being in the customs union, being in single market, while other things are being negotiated, purely in terms of employment, purely in terms of economic growth, would it be the terror that politicians are perhaps making out?
I think from their perspective, it wouldn't necessarily be the terror as long as you still had a voice at the table. And I know that's a lot to ask considering we voted to leave, but sure. When you're effectively then taking rules for an indefinite amount of time, then from a purely political standpoint, it is quite horrific, this idea that in 20 years' time we could still be taking rules and taking guidance from the EU. That's not anything like what people actually voted for 2 years ago. So from that perspective, then yes, it is actually not the ideal scenario. And the thing that confuses me is this idea that it's either this or no deal, because correct me if I'm wrong, but if we leave with a no deal Brexit on the 29th of March, then there is going to be a hard border on the island of Ireland anyway. Yeah. So this idea that it's either this or nothing doesn't suggest to me that the Northern Ireland border is really the entire motivation of the EU, because otherwise they wouldn't be so willing to accept the alternative.
We are, as you say, moving towards that deadline where no deal becomes the only option. We're automatically leaving the EU on the 29th of March, regardless of what happens in the Commons. So these things, these contempt proceedings, even the meaningful votes on the 11th of December, is this actually getting us anywhere where we get a bit more clarity, or is this sort of, I mean, it just seems sometimes like we're sort of playing in the sandpit.
Yeah, we're not getting any more clarity, but I think the only The only thing that we can look back on this and say that is good is that we are actually nearing the point when decisions are going to have to be made. I think we're following a process right now, and we say we like to think that politicians have been doing nothing for the last 18 months, but really they know that the process that is lying out there now, and we're just literally going through the motions from point one to point two. And we will get through. We're just going to go through all the frustration that lies in the middle. This isn't great for business, but unlike the last 18 months, we know that there's a very good chance that this is we're within weeks of knowing exactly where we're going to stand, whereas previously it's been a matter of months or even years. So yes, we don't know the answer right now, but I think we're moving to a point where I think come Christmas, for example, we're going to be far more clear as to what the process is going to be on the 29th of March. And yes, it could drag into January, but let's be honest, in the grand scheme of things, is a month the end of the world? For me, I'm just glad that we're actually seeing movement and that we're getting to a point when we're going to have more clarity, because right now I think there's more confusion around what the actual shape of this exit is going to be than there's been for the last 18 months.
And from markets perspective, so we've got a tumultuous week ahead in terms of, I would imagine that yourself and your colleagues will be looking at what's going on in the Commons with great interest. We have, of course, the contempt proceedings potentially beginning today. We also have 5 days of debates on the withdrawal agreement if those contempt proceedings don't throw a spanner into the works. And then, of course, we've got the vote, which Theresa May, certainly at this point, seems to look as if she may lose. What are we going to be expecting in terms of markets from this?
Yeah, markets love uncertainty, right? That's
our catchphrase.
Yeah, I mean, I think markets so far, we have seen some negativity. The barometer is always the pound, right? When we're looking at these Brexit talks, that seems to be the most volatile, the quickest to respond. And so far, yeah, we have seen some weakness in that, but we haven't seen anything overly dramatic, which makes me think, and this is something I've said for a long time, I think traders are optimistic in the long run and they're therefore very reluctant to change their view. So we have seen the pound dragging lower, but there's this underlying support which suggests to me that people are just saying in this situation, we're so close to this solution. So it's almost, if we get a positive outcome from this would be very pound bullish. So there's almost this reluctancy to let go of these pound longs, but you are seeing it being dragged lower slowly but surely. You wonder what's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, which people say, right, I'm done, I'm out of here, this isn't going as I expected.
If that was to happen, could we see the pound collapse dramatically?
Yeah, I mean, if it looks like we're heading for a no-deal Brexit, then it's a case of whether we're going for this fabled cliff-edge Brexit or what people were talking a lot about last week, which is the area that I would be more inclined to lean towards, which is a managed no-deal Brexit because of the harm it'd be unnecessarily doing to both sides for the former. But if it looks for even briefly like we're heading for a cliff-edge no-deal Brexit, then we could be looking for another 10% decline in the pound quite easily because of the economic short, especially in the near term. I mean, people have argued that in the medium to long term, it may not be as catastrophic as the warning signs that we're seeing. And naturally, people are looking at the wrong testing anyway, like the stress tests as an example from last week, as an idea of what we're forecasting, which isn't an actual forecast. But in the short term, it would be quite devastating, the prospect of a cliff-edge no-deal Brexit, as we've covered many times in the past. So I think the impact on the pound, therefore, near-term would be quite dramatic in the similar fact of what we saw in the aftermath of the actual referendum result itself.
And briefly then, Craig, what about from the other side of the channel? How are you seeing the money moving in terms of Europe? Because as we've said, although things could be potentially extremely dicey for the UK economy, this is going to have big impacts on those countries which trade with the EU, with the UK as well.
Yeah, so Ireland is the one that people have highlighted is going to be the most heavily impacted. It's more than 50% of Irish trade is with the UK. So again, all of this is to protect Ireland. But again, if you go for a no deal, you're going to see a border on Northern Ireland, and then you're going to see Irish trade and probably a recession in Ireland as well as the Republic of Ireland as well as the UK. So when I say that it's in no one's best interest, I genuinely do mean that. If the EU is going to blindly walk towards a no-deal Brexit, what message does that send to the people of Ireland? It's like, well, we tried, they didn't do what we wanted, so we gave up and we just left you, we just dropped you in it. That's not the message which they're going to want to send. They are putting up a hard stance right now, but that is a negotiation. It's what we've been saying for so long. You can't always believe everything you hear. This is a negotiation, and during a negotiation, you have to at least give the impression of strength. And I think that if we see this voted down in Parliament, I think we'll see some very quick movement in terms of trying to find a solution. Because again, a cliff edge no deal Brexit, I just think is a highly, highly unlikely scenario.